The following is a presentation of Dating Kinky, built by kinksters, for kinksters, poly, queer, trans folk, and anyone not quite vanilla. And it's free.
Welcome in. We've saved a special space just for you. We've saved a space where you can allow yourself to be who you have always dreamed to be. One without apologies for who you are, and one without fear. One where you can simply be authentically you. The show is called Authentically Kinky, and it is presented by Dating Kinky and is powered by Clips for Sale. Your host is John, also known as Hi There Catsuit, and each week they visit with kink and fetish personalities to bring you their stories. Now go to that safe space in your mind and meet someone who's just like you, who has lived their life finding out why they are who they are and living a life that is authentically kinky.
That make me collapse into winding serpentine feelings, interpreting my words through whispers and gasps. Make me helpless, make me yours. Hold me, shake me, as darling, do your worst. Serving you is all I wanna do.
Hello and welcome. The name of the program is Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky, and I am your host, John, also known as Hi There Catsuit. Today, we will go halfway around the world on this very special video edition of the program to meet a person who started as a mainstream entertainer, but was outed and became her authentic self through discovering her BDSM roots. Let's go halfway around the world to South Africa. Mistress Batten is a disciplinarian, tour dom, and BDSM content producer based in Johannesburg, South Africa, and internationally renowned as an expert in the use of the South African hippo hide sjambok and cane. Her films explore corporal punishment, role play, foot fetish, CBT, electroplay, and latex. Mistress Batten is authentically kinky.
The genesis of the story always begins with memorable firsts, and that is how we start our show each and every time. This is The First Five, proudly presented by KinksterMerch.com.
First time you appeared on television, what was the role or the circumstance, and what was it like to be on TV?
Okay, so the first time I appeared on television was when I was 8 years old. My mother was a model, and somebody asked her, a casting agent asked her to bring me and my sister to a casting for Stork is B Margarine. And we both got, we were both successful in our audition, and we played sisters in a, it was just a family commercial, you know, about margarine, family sitting around the table, enjoying themselves. What was it like? It was fantastic for us because we sat in high makeup chairs with makeup artists puffing around us. And then we sat on a table, we had nice catering, you know, like on a normal TV set. But for us, it was a first and we loved it. But the one terrible thing about it, there was a series in the 80s called Pepero and the City of the Golden Eagle. It was a South American cartoon series, and I loved it. It was broadcast every Saturday morning, and this ad, the Stork is B ad, was shot on a Saturday morning. And it was the very last episode. And I asked my father to tape it for me on a VHS recorder, and he forgot. So I never saw the last episode of Pepero. So I was crestfallen.
Have you found it on YouTube?
No, I think I have looked on YouTube, but I don't think it's available. I don't know. I must look again.
May have to do some research for you.
Yes.
First time you realized you had proclivities towards BDSM.
Well, the first time I realized it was BDM was probably in my 20s, but ever since I was a little girl, I loved seeing whipping scenes and caning scenes. And there was a lot of it on TV. You know, Indiana Jones, he's always cracking that whip of his. You know, there was lots of school series where boys were beaten with canes and paddles and all sorts of things. You know, you actually see quite a lot of corporal punishment in TV series, etc. Most recently, I saw a belting scene on A Handmaid's Tale. I think it was in two series ago. Mm-hmm. And so I always loved seeing that. It's usually the protagonists that are beaten, or often. So I never liked that, you know, maybe if it was a series about slavery in the Deep South, you know, centuries ago. I hated seeing the slaves beaten because they were the protagonists. But mm-hmm. I loved seeing the whip traveling through the air. And so I always loved seeing corporal punishment. I didn't want it being done to me. I just liked seeing it done. I also liked seeing it done to boys in school because some of the teachers often beat the boys with paddles or straps in front of the whole class. You know, if they were very naughty, they were sent to the headmaster's office, and obviously we didn't see that. But I loved seeing the boys returning to class after they were beaten by the headmaster, rubbing their bums and things like that. So it's been with me since I was a little girl, but I only realized it's related. Something like BDSM existed when I was in my 20s.
First time you held the tools of a correctional officer and the first time you got to use it, what did it feel like?
The first time I got to use it was 9 years ago, and it was a cane. And the first stroke I landed, I enjoyed it so much, and I knew it would become a very big part of my life.
Wow.
It was 9 years and 2 months ago. It was in November 2014.
Wow. Do you remember your first session as a pro dom and how you felt going into it?
Yes. It was shortly after I was outed. And I was confident in my corporal punishment abilities because I've been playing a lot by then. So I was confident in my abilities with a cane and with many corporal punishment implements. But what I had trouble with in the beginning and what I was most nervous about was session structuring. You know, how to structure a session to fill the hour or the 2 hours without the bottom becoming overwhelmed or too nervous or, you know, or damaging their bum too much in the beginning so that you can't carry on, you know, things like that. So it took me a while to figure all of that out.
You mentioned being outed. You were a well-known TV presenter and actress in South Africa, and you were outed by, from what I understand, was a stalker. Mm. Explain to me the first moment when you realized I have to make a change in my life and BDSM is the direction I'm going to go.
So the stalker stole photos of a Pet Life page where there was a school event and there was a photographer there and there was a photo of me from the side busy caning somebody. And he sent it to lots of newspapers and magazines in South Africa. And the one magazine, it's a Sunday magazine, they phoned me on a Saturday late morning and said to me that they received this photo and that they it's me. What do I have to say about it? And I denied that it's me. So they said, well, they're going to publish anyway. And they phoned me a few minutes later because it's just near to the time before they going to press because it's a Sunday magazine. So that afternoon they were going to press. So they said, no, they're going to wait a week. They're going to give me time to think about it. They want me to confess and they want my, what I have to say about it. So that gave me 7 days leeway. Well, I thought about it for 2 days and the Monday I decided I am not going to give this publication or any publication the satisfaction because it's vanilla publications, obviously. the dissatisfaction of outing me publicly in the first place and sensationalizing it, because I knew they would do obviously to sell more newspapers, because most people find it scandalous or whatever, you know, the vanilla population. So I outed myself on Facebook, and I outed myself so thoroughly that there was nothing left for them to say. They went ahead and published it anyway. But by then, you know, I was outed anyway. Everybody knew. I enjoyed BDSM so much and filming it. So my head was cut off in all my videos by then, and I was only putting it on Fetlife. But I, since everybody knew already, I started showing my face in my videos, and yeah, it just took off. I enjoyed it much more than I did the acting industry. And the reason for that is, in the acting industry, for me, the powerlessness that you as an actor have was just too overwhelming. So no matter how professional you are, or how good you are at your job, or how popular you are, you're always dependent on whether you get work, or, and if you don't get work, your mental health suffers, your finances suffer, everything suffers. So all of that is dependent on the whim or the taste of a director and a producer. It's that power is never with me. It's always with somebody else, whether I get the job or not. And that part of it, I couldn't stand any longer. And for that reason, I decided I'm rather going to go with the BDSM industry.
We have just started to tell the story of Mistress Batten from South Africa. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about that transition and the support she felt when going from TV presenter and actress to BDSM connoisseur to eventually someone who enjoyed and became famous for that as well. When we come back, it's Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky, and we're back in a moment.
This is Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale, with special thanks to our partners, Fetish Con, Masuna Music, Kinkster Merch, Medusa Media Management, and The Adventures of Ultra Girl. Authentically Kinky is on the web at AuthenticallyKinky.com. You can find us on social media on X and FetLife at AuthKinkyPod, and on Instagram and YouTube at Authentically Kinky Podcast.
This is the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. That's 25 years of fighting for your rights. NCSF got the American Psychiatric Association to change their diagnostic manual so kinky people can no longer be called sick just because of how we like to have sex. And now we've gotten the American Law Institute to create a legal framework for consent to kink called explicit prior permission. Please join our coalition. We're just like you, kinky and polyamorous volunteers who are making these great changes, and you can help.
For more information, visit ncsfreedom.org.
Hey, did you know that there's a one-of-a-kind matchmaking service for cuckolding and female-led relationships? Join now at venusconnections.com and use the code TOPTIER2024 for 40% off the top 1% membership. That's venusconnections.com. Make 2024 the year that you get the relationship of your dreams.
This is Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky, and here, once again, is your host, John, or as we like to call them, Hi There, Catsuit.
I actually went to your SATV page today to take a look at some of your acting and some of the things that you did. And you were to South Africa what a star would be over here in the United States, somebody that was recognizable every single day. And you mentioned just before the break how someone decided that they were going to release photos of you without your consent. But it allowed you to become your authentic self.
Yes.
Talk to me about the support you received from others and how it helped you become the authentic person you wanted to be?
So the Sunday newspaper published an article the next week, and there were subsequent articles. I made the wise choice. My husband advised me not to read any of the online articles, the vanilla ones, and the comments underneath. It was nasty what a lot of the vanilla population had to say. By the time I was outed, everybody knew, my closest family, everyone except my grandmother. She did not know. We were very, very close. She died 2.5 years ago. And she, somebody slipped the newspaper that Sunday underneath her door in the old age home while she was at church, open on the page with the article. So she phoned me and said to me, "What is this? Did somebody wrong you? Why? What, you know, what's going on?" So I said to her, "It's not possible to explain over the phone." And the next day I fetched her for a 2-day visit. And it took me, we sat and crocheted together on the couch, and it took a 6-hour conversation to explain to her, because I had to start right. She was 89 at that stage. She had no idea even what Betty's M is. So it took a 6-hour conversation for me to explain to her what it is. And then what in that vast amount of fetishes and BDSM and practices, it is exactly what I do, why I do it, etc. And then she understood eventually after 6 hours. And then I showed her my dungeon. And then we just had a normal visit the rest of the day. And the next day she said to me, "So let me see, show me these videos." So I was very fearful. I took two of the mildest ones, but I don't really have had very mild videos. So I showed her after 2.5 caning videos. She said, "Thank you. Now I understand exactly. You can switch it off." And why I'm telling you this long story is just, it was very important for me that my grandmother understands, because she was a great source of support just in general my whole life. So even though, I mean, I never went into detail after that with her, whatever, I didn't have to hide it. And you know, just being publicly outed and everybody's opinion, because I'm well known in South Africa, it was difficult. It was sort of as if I was in a fire, but being burned in a fire, everybody suddenly knows everything about you. But it was also a cleansing fire, because even though it was without my consent, I did not choose to be outed. Eventually, the truth does set you free to be your authentic self. I did receive a lot of support from thousands of strangers that messaged me on FetLife, on Facebook. It became, the support actually became quite damaging, because then I still thought that I have to reply to every message, you know. So I used to sit days and days and thank people. But eventually I just gave up, because you cannot answer everybody. I learned to deal with lots of attention, but I did receive overwhelming support from the international BDSM community. Yes.
It is such a painful story, but I get back to visualizing you and your grandmother sitting in a room talking to each other. And your grandmother, who's loved you all your life, looking across the table and seeing the exact same person that she's always known. Nothing had changed about you. What had changed is everybody's perception of you.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it was so
valuable that she could see through that and then understand that, and still, I'm still just her beloved granddaughter. It was incredibly valuable.
You talked about a cleansing fire where you were able to become your authentic self and didn't have to hide anymore. What kind of a weight was that to be lifted off your shoulders?
Well, it wasn't immediate because it was just so overwhelming. And I mean, the trauma of suddenly everybody having this opinion of you and knowing that so many people judge you. So it wasn't immediate. But eventually, because also 2 days after I was out, unrelated to it, my mother died suddenly of an embolism, blood clots. And so it was a double whammy, you know. So the trauma prevented me from immediately realizing the value of it. But eventually I did. And it was fantastic because I don't have to hide. And it enabled me to, because lots of vanilla people still do ask me questions about BDSM, and you know, I was able to help lessen the prejudice around in my whichever influence or reach I had or have. I was able to maybe change quite a lot of people's opinion about it, which I feel glad about, because I don't want BDSM to be seen as something deviant or dark or evil or anything, because obviously me and you know it's not.
The beautiful thing about that, if there could be a beautiful thing, is the people you work with now on a day-to-day basis have all felt or are feeling now the same thing you feel or you felt when you came out, which is, I'm scared how other people see me. I'm not sure if I'm ready for this. And then in some cases, you allow them to finally accept themselves for what they are and what they love and not have to feel guilty about it.
I'm very glad if I can help people, you know, feel the way you just described. But I just hope that it happens to as few people as possible to be outed against their will, because it is just like somebody who is HIV positive or somebody who is gay or in the closet in any way. Mm-hmm. It should never be done against their will, because it is incredibly traumatic and it can be so damaging that people lose their jobs and, you know.
I was teaching a class in Chicago at Kinky College. One of the classes I teach is called Kindness and Other Kinks. And there was a gentleman who I could see crying in the audience. And I went over to him and I said, may I put my hand on your shoulder? And he said, yes. I said, obviously you're distraught about this. What's going on? And he goes, if anyone at my hometown knew that I was sitting in this room, I would be instantly fired and my life would be over. He was a school bus driver, an everyday worker who never crossed the two things, but had this life at home. And I was able to tell him, I said, look around this room. This room is filled with people who are just like you. You're not alone. And he actually sent me a note on FET a couple of years later saying that he has a partner now. He's living his best kink life. And it was that day that he realized that he could accept himself, because he was very close to never being able to accept himself. So the little gifts we get.
And he's very lucky that he could find a partner that's also into kink, because that's the holy grail for many people, you know. And most people don't get that, you know. Usually in most relationship, one is kinky and the other one is not. Mm-hmm. So he's lucky.
So as a TV presenter, I think you're going to love this segue.
Yes.
We go from the pain of being scared of being authentic to the pain you feel on your bum when someone hits you with a cane. How's that for a segue?
Yes, yes, right.
You are into, in one of the things that you mention, judicial corporal punishment.
Yes.
That sounds scary as hell. Can you explain to me what that is?
Yes, so judicial obviously means it's something that is ordered by the law. So judicial corporal punishment, it is two parts of it. So the one part of it is the severity. I use the word judicial to describe a certain severity of caning, and that means every stroke that you land is a cut. Every stroke is a blood stripe. That is the severity at which you play. So that is judicial severity. It does not get harder than that. And then judicial is also the type of role play. So it's very strict role play. It's usually in prison, because judicial corporal punishment was always done, and is still in certain countries, done by either police or prison officers. That's it, nobody else. So so there's a certain type of role play that goes with judicial corporal punishment, if it's a role play session. And that is then usually the style of role play is prison style, police scenario, etc.
I am not yucking anybody's yum at all. But I'm trying to figure out the mindset that brings somebody to that severity. Is there a certain kind of person that absolutely resonates with, or is there a certain kind of person where that is, that level of severity is the only thing that gets to their mind and allows them to release in some way in their mind and go to that space that we all know and love?
Well, there's many reasons why people like to receive at that severity. One of the reasons is some people, some canines, corporal punishment enthusiasts, masochists, play irresponsibly. Or they go to inexperienced or unskilled tops. So they play too often, and then what happens is it's a pipeline of leather butt, soft spots, keloid scarring. So if somebody has been playing too often for years, what happens if they have that sort of damage on their bum is they lose sensation, they lose feeling. And for them, they have to play very hard in order to feel something. That's one of the reasons. Another reason is some people are just masochists who like intense pain. They like impact play, and that's it. And they like it very hard. For many people who are caning enthusiasts, but and like to play hard, but not necessarily judicial. For many people, it's like a bucket list thing to be caned, to receive a judicial caning, or receive a judicial caning specifically from me. So they've seen my videos and they want to recreate that sort of thing. Some people are addicted, or they just love that adrenaline rush of the fear beforehand, knowing that you are receiving a caning that is as hard as it gets, or nearly as hard as it gets, you know. Some people just like the authentic type of role play of judicial corporal punishment, because it was abolished in most countries, but relatively recently in Canada, I think 37 years ago, in the UK, also in the last 50 years in South Africa, it was abolished in 1995, you know. So many people know somebody who received judicial corporal punishment, real judicial corporal punishment, and they have a fixation with it, and they, you know, they want to try and experience that. For me, I have spoken to many people that have received judicial corporal punishment, both in South Africa and abroad, from the South Africa police, and you know, so obviously that's something else. It's not consensual. It's real life, whatever. Mm-hmm. In no way do I want to glamorize judicial corporal punishment or glamorize the extreme trauma and pain that people who really experienced it went through. But that's also what sparked my interest in it, because it happened while I was still in school. I knew about police scanning. What sometimes say something that happened often in my hometown. When boys got their learner's license to drive, or their license for the first time, they would speed late at night, or, you know, do things like that. And then if the police caught them without a court ordering it, they would take them to the police station, phone their parents. The parents would often be there, and then the police would give them a cut or two.
Wow.
You know, with a cane. And they won't make a case against the boy, because they knew if they make a case, then he might have a criminal record. And it was just sort of naughtiness, irresponsibility. And the police canings were so incredibly severe that that one or two strokes was usually good enough or hectic enough that they would never repeat the same mistake, you know. So I myself knew several boys who received police cuts, and I think that sparked my interest.
Wow. We've talked about receiving. Mm-hmm. You are the one that gives. Talk to me about your headspace when you're able to give something like that.
So I always make sure that I am incredibly calm before a session. I do meticulous session prep, both in the pre-session negotiation. I have a very long questionnaire. Some people complain about it, 30 questions. Medical questions, preference questions, questions about their pronouns, their health, etc. You know, the severity at which they receive, the role play, if they want regression, really an intense questionnaire. So I do meticulous session prep. I'm always very calm. And the moment I put my hand around the handle of my cane, I feel incredibly calm, and literally the whole world disappears. So if I can be hungry, or I can be tired, or I can be maybe sad, or whatever, worried about whatever, the moment I hold a cane, everything disappears. And I find that incredibly therapeutic for myself as a top. So no matter how hardcore the role play is, how hardcore the scene is, I am always incredibly calm and incredibly aware of the bottom. So I do go into top space relatively easily, but it is always a sober top space. The ecstasy part of the top space usually come in a rush after the session. I always hold it at bay, and I will also hold my bloodlust at bay, because if I become too excited or go too deep into top space, I myself will not be able to make safe decisions anymore on behalf of the bottom when they go into subspace and they are not allowed able to make safe decisions any longer. So that is the headspace of me during play, any type of play, including the very hard play, because I am very bloodthirsty, and I do have a great bloodlust. I do have a blood fetish as well, so I love it when the blood starts flowing. But it's dangerous, specifically with caning. Dangerous once the blood starts flowing, because then you can't see how deep the cuts are any longer, and you risk scarring the bottom permanently. Also, blood makes the bum slippery. No matter how many times you wipe, once the blood starts flowing freely, I always stop, because the cane can also sip, and then you have misstrokes and all sorts of things, you know. So I am always very calm and very sober in a session, no matter how hardcore the role play or how hardcore the play.
Is there anything else in life that gives you the intense feeling of being in the moment than that?
Yes. Six does it. Um, meal times with my family, I'm a feeder. One of the ways in which I show my love most to those I love the most is by feeding them incredible meals. I love cooking and baking. So when I'm busy food prepping, I love spending a whole day in the kitchen. I really love it. My baking intricate cakes and things like that. So I do go into quite a meditative state when I cook and bake as well. So that also gives me a lot of time, of that in the moment. And obviously, sex is for most people, it is, you are there in the moment usually, So that's quite obvious.
I find the amazing combination of your love of corporal punishment to be there with sex and with feeding, because it shows me that your mind and your heart and your soul is about giving in every way that you can. How do you receive? What fills you up when somebody brings something to you?
The physical presence of my loved ones, which is quite difficult because three of the people I love most in the world live abroad, my two children and my sister. What makes me receive love and is the physical presence of my loved ones and being in their company. And also to correspond and to have conversations with the people I trust the most in this world. And there are very few people who you can trust implicitly. And I'm also a very physically affectionate person, affection. Even in a non-sexual way. comes through in my sessions very, very obviously. So the videos of me out there playing with my natural personality, I am constantly stroking the bottom, feeling the cuts and rubbing the recipient's shoulder, comforting them in between the sets of six cane strokes and whatever, So physical affection for me, even if it's just a hug from somebody I just caned, physical affection from my husband, my children, my dogs, that is how I receive affection.
Seems like another natural segue for my television presenter friend. I would guess that aftercare in these scenes is next level. Because after somebody who has received something like that, if they have a hard landing, unless that's what they want, which I totally understand, but that's a really hard landing when something happens that's that intense. And I would guess that there's many times when your aftercare has to be as intense as the scene was.
Yes. So I always, no matter what type of role play I do with judicial role play, there's always an out for the bottom, and that makes them feel very safe. And the out is always, if it's judicial role play, it is always, you cannot stop this punishment because the court ordered it, okay? Except if there's a medical emergency, and then I will go and fetch the doctor and he will examine you, and then we will decide whether we go on. And that always gives the bottom an out. So it doesn't have to be a real medical emergency, they can say, because that allows you to have an orange or a red safe word built in without having to break the role play. Because usually in the scene, if the role play breaks, it's difficult to get it back. So that gives them a way of getting out of it, and it makes them feel less fearful in a way. So that's in a way where the aftercare starts, and the moment the scene ends, I immediately check on the bottom. If they are still restrained, I first go to and speak to them, stroke their head, rub their shoulders, and then we'll take off their restraints and do the medical aftercare first. So if it was a judicial caning and there's blood, I will sterilize the wounds with warm salt water, wound spray. I will line their underpants with sanitary pads so that it won't seep through onto their underpants. And I always have a chat afterwards. If somebody needs to be hugged or held, I do that. So I provide both medical, emotional, and physical aftercare.
That's just beautiful.
Thank you.
I want to take a break here because we've talked about some really intense things and allow people to get a breath themselves. And when we come back, we're going to introduce many people who are over here in the States to the word Shambok. When we come back on Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky, Mistress Batten is my guest. We're back with more after this.
Authentically Kinky is the official podcast of FetishCon. Join us for the largest trade show in fetish in 2024. It's in St. Petersburg, Florida, August 8th through 11th, and you can get all the information at fetishcon.com. Visit our Authentically Kinky store at kinkstermerch.com. You can find empowering designs for all you authentically kinky people, as well as an entire range of designs for all the kinksters in your life, all at kinkstermerch.com. If you want to catch episodes of The Old What Women and Other Wonderful Humans Want or any of Authentically Kinky's previous shows, you can find links to them all at authenticallykinky.com. Now, let's get back to John and their guests on Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale.
Welcome back to the program. My name is John, also known as Hi There Catsuit, joined by a fellow catsuit connoisseur, Mistress Batten. You like your catsuits, I understand. What developed your love of them?
There was a TV series in the 80s called Buck Rogers, and one of the characters was Captain, was Wilma. I think she was a
Wilma
captain
Deering,
as well.
Yes.
Yes, Wilma Deering, played by Erin Rogers. And she was always, she wearing catsuits. Mm-hmm. Made of spandex and nylon. And I watched Buck Rogers every week when it aired in South Africa. And I said to my father and my sister every week when we watched it, when I am grown, I am going to wear clothes like her every single day. obviously, I don't wear it every single day, but I do have a love of tight-fitting clothing, and I wear leggings every day, and I wear catsuits every opportunity that I get. I ordered 2 spandex catsuits from Hirugatu last week, so I can't wait to receive them. I've never ordered from them. I have many latex catsuits, but I don't have spandex catsuit yet, so I'm very excited for them to arrive.
I'm going to say this in the most loving way I can. Can you clone yourself and send you over to the United States?
Well, I do hope we meet one day.
I genuinely do as well. I want to talk about something that here in Cincinnati, when we think of hippos, we think of the wonderful little Fiona, who is the absolute star of the Cincinnati Zoo. But when you think of hippos, you think of something totally different, which is something that is made of hippo hide called a shambok. I have heard of this mostly from a lot from BDSM, but just knowing people from South Africa, where I have heard about this thing and it sounds scary. Explain to me what a shambok is and what it does.
Okay, so shamboks are actually mostly made from rubber. But originally, hundreds of years ago, It is an African implement. It's widespread through Africa, south of the Sahara, south of the equator, where there's a lot of grassland, savannas, you know, the savannas of Africa, vast grasslands with lots of wild animals centuries ago, lots of different African tribes in many different countries had vast herds of cattle. So the cattle herds, if they are walking, watching the cattle through the long grass of the savannah, obviously there's many snakes in Africa as well. So what the sjambocks are mostly used for, their original use, because sjambocks are long implements, 1 to 1.5 meters long at least, and they are stiff. Before rubber existed in Africa, you know, was before rubber was widespread, it was always made from a type of leather. Different types of leather, ox leather, hippo leather, etc. And they used to use it, they used to hold it in front of them and wave it near to the ground through the grass so that they can scare away snakes that might be in front of them, and they won't see the snakes because it's savanna, it's thick grass. So it will scare away snakes in front of you. And if a snake does surprise you, the sjambok is long, so you can beat the snake or the or kill the snake with the long sjambok without the snake being within striking distance of biting you. That's the most widely used reason, use of it. Another use of it is to, you know, the rump of an ox is strong and thick. So they used to use it for cattle herding. They still do cattle herding. So just giving, not beating the cattle or beating an animal, just tapping them on the rump to lead them in a specific direction, you know. So it's for herding, literally herding the cattle. It is also widely used for judicial punishment by elders in African tribes on youths who misbehave, and also used as tribal justice on adults who do grievous crimes, like sexual crimes, you know, raping or stealing something that's very valuable. It was used and is still used for that reason. There are many videos online of real sjambok punishments that happens to this day. It was also used for riot control, rubber sjamboks, a lot in apartheid South Africa by the police on crowds of people. It was used as recently as 2020 in South Africa, where army members and police, members of the police used to use sjamboks to chase people back into their homes if they broke lockdown rules.
Oh, wow.
yes.
That's serious.
Yes. So the most common material that it's made from is rubber. There are plastic in South Africa at any, if I drive through the city for 20 minutes long, there will be at least three traffic light intersections where plastic sjamboks will be sold. So it's made from plastic and it's very whippy at the end. It's the most common type of sjambok in South Africa. Some people use it to discipline very large farm dogs like boerboels, which is a South African type of farm dog, a really big dog. I'm not in favor of that. I'm just explaining to you all the types, different mm-hmm. reasons why people use it. And then, so why hippo hide is so good as a sjambok material is because hippo is one of the animals in the world with the thickest hides, along with elephants and rhinos. Obviously, it cannot ever be made from rhino hide because rhinos are critically endangered, all types mm-hmm. of rhinos everywhere. But hippos are not critically endangered. They're not even endangered. They are protected, though. So it's not that easy to acquire hippohide. It remains a rare implement, but the quality of the hippo leather is incredible. It is so hard when it's thick. Obviously, towards the end where it tapers, it's slightly whippy, but it's so hard that it feels like wood. It's so thick and so hard. It's incredible.
In BDSM, it sounds like it could be very painful.
Yes. So the density of the leather does give a sensation when you hit with it, unlike anything else, because the leather is so very dense. So it feels different to other leather implements. It feels different to a cane, obviously, because it's much thicker than a cane, and it's a much more thuddy implement. So it gives immediate black bruising if you use it at a hard severity.
It sounds scary.
Yes, but it's also a really beautiful implement. The hippo leather's color ranges from milky white and to amber colored translucency. So wow. There's also a range of colors, and it looks unlike any other leather. So it's just a nice collector's piece for some people, but it's also a popular corporal punishment implement.
When I teach my classes on kindness, there's one portion of my class where I talk about a impact scene that was done for me for my birthday. Now, I started out as a total sensation person. Obviously, cat suits, they make me feel good. And then got into impact slowly. And now it's gotten to the point where I don't think I can do a judicial caning, thank you very much, but it's gotten to the point where the impact that I take always comes as a huge surprise to people I play with regularly. They're like, Katsuit, how are you doing that? We didn't think we could do it that hard with you. And in my kindness class, I talk about the kindness of testing somebody's limits and showing them that they can push through things that they never imagine. And that there is this certain kindness that goes with that, that genuinely shows you care and you have affection for that person. Mm. It's a strange way of looking at somebody who hits somebody so hard that it brings up blood. But the fact is, it is your intention, and pardon me if I'm speaking for you, but you can tell me how you feel. It is your intention to bring an experience to that person that puts them in a beautiful state. And how kind is that?
Yes, for me, the bottom line always remains. So I weed out people that are not compatible with me through my questionnaire. So by the time somebody has completed my questionnaire, I already know we are compatible. If we're compatible, I can see it, and then I will accept them as for a session. And so I already know I'm going to have fun because we are very compatible. I only see people I'm very compatible with. So for me, I already know I'm going to have fun because we are compatible. So from there on, for me, it's all about the bottom for several reasons. Because I am mostly booked for very hard play, it is incredibly important that the bottom's safety and mental health during the session remains in a stable state. So it has to be all about the bottom if you play at a certain level. For me, it makes me incredibly happy when I see how happy it makes people. There's one of my clients once after a beating said to me, oh, thank goodness, now I won't have road rage for the next 2 weeks. You know, so after an incredible beating with blood and whatever. And, you know, for me, seeing the most introverted people, there's a lot of introverted people that see me. And as we progress through the session and the endorphins from the pain and the excitement and everything starts coursing through their blood and they start going into subspace, the shyest people who becomes the biggest chatterboxes that you can imagine, you know, and they start chatting from excitement and the pain and the endorphins and seeing people get off the caning bench after the session and their eyes are heavy lidded from, they sort of look stoned often, you know, from the pleasure of the endorphins. And to also to see the pride people feel when they, that they've endured this. Because for many people, why it's on many people's bucket list is, I get the feeling that they think, if I can endure what she's going to give me, if I can endure a judicial caning, then I can do anything. And to know that that feeling is going to stay with them for days or weeks afterwards, and it's probably going to have a beneficial effect on different areas of their life, you know, even if it's just that they won't have road rage for the next 2 weeks. That makes me incredibly happy. So obviously I'm a sadist. I love giving them pain as well. But for me, what is most valuable in BDSM is the happiness and the pleasure and the kindness. You were speaking about kindness, the kindness that I feel I send out in the world, into the world, by making this person very happy. And I know that subspace and the feelings of pride and achievement that people feel do have a domino effect. It affects them in different areas of their life. And in a way, you were speaking about kindness. It is like spreading kindness, even though, like you said, it's a sort of an upside down way of achieving it. If you just think about the vanilla world, but in our world, the BDSM world, it makes complete sense.
I wrote down, and I very rarely write down words before I talk to somebody, but I did write down one. And I think it is an amazing observation for the end of our podcast. The word I wrote down was merciless, which is how you describe yourself. But if you take the last 3 or 4 minutes of the podcast, the person who sees themselves as merciless is actually one of the kindest people I've ever met.
Thank you, John. I can explain that if you want.
Please.
So, as a sadist, I am merciless. So, I do not feel sorry for them for the pain they're experiencing, because I enjoy it as well, and they chose to be there. But I still do have incredible empathy as well as incredible respect for masochists or submissives who are able to take that pain, because I can't do it. So I have immense respect for them, even while I'm enjoying inflicting pain on them. And I have empathy with their pain, even though I am merciless in my execution of their session requirements. So as a sadist, I am merciless, but my empathy as a person, my respect for the pain the bottoms endure, are greater than my sadism is, than my mercilessness is.
What is the best way for people to follow the journey of Mistress Batten?
Well, I make a lot of content. So if you would like to buy my clips, it's on Clips for Sale. It's the platform I sell from. I also do make quite a lot of free content. I make quite a lot of educational videos. There are many free training videos, how to do different things. That you can find on my FitLife and my Twitter pages. And if you want to get in contact with me, there's a contact form on my website, Mistress Batten at mistresspatten.com. I'm most active on Twitter, X, and also on FitLife. And the easiest way to get me to reply is via email, via the contact form on my website, if you want to contact me.
What an amazing, more than an hour it's been in getting to talk to you. I thank you so much. This has been a true honor for me.
Thank you, John. It was a true honor for me as well. I was so excited to chat to you. And I can understand why you teach classes on kindness. Besides being interesting and fun, you are incredibly kind. And thank you for your kind words.
What an amazing conversation and an amazing story. It is so good to get to know her and bring her story to you. Now let's take a look at what's going to be coming up on the next edition of Authentically Kinky.
Coming up on the next edition of Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale.
She is an artist, a dominatrix, and model. Truly the new breed of professional dominatrix. Aggressive and fearless. She is the owner of the world-famous Atlanta Dungeon. She is Mistress Ultraviolet, next Tuesday on the show.
Join us for that new show next Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for being with us for this special video edition of the program. I'm John, also known as Hi There Catsuit. I hope I've earned the privilege of your time, and I remind you to always remember consent, and to love each other always.
Is my will dissolving, or are you resolving all the tension stored in my mind? With the space I'm in, any decadent whim that you create will be by design. Take me captive as your
joining us for the show. You can get all the information on the podcast by visiting AuthenticallyKinky.com. You can find our theme song on Spotify. It's called Freya by Masuna, and you can find links to their work on our website as well.
This has been a presentation of Dating Kinky, built by kinksters, for kinksters, poly, queer, trans folk, and anyone not quite vanilla. And it's free.